We're actually going to launch our tour of the marine realm at the beach, predictably enough. I have in front of me something that beaches are probably best known for, and that is, of course, sand. I also have a granular materials scientist. He's not granular. What he studies is, that's Matt Aaron. He's from the University of Cambridge. And he also knows a thing or two, I'm told, about building a supreme sandcastle. Matt, when we say sand, what actually is sand?
So most sand is lots of rocks that have been ground down over millions of years in the oceans or in the rivers. It can be corals that are ground down on some tropical beaches, or in the case of Iceland or some bits of Scotland, it can be volcanoes that have been ground down to make black sand.
And that's why the sand differs in colour and texture and composition.
Yes, exactly. And that turns out to be important for sandcastles too.
Speaking of which, what have you got in front of you?
So in front of me, I have a metal tray, a big one like you'd use for doing a roast. And in the tray, I have three plastic cylinders. So they're about 20 centimetres high. And in each cylinder, I have some sand, as you'd expect. In one tube, it's dry. In another tube, I have it completely saturated with water, just as you'd find at the beach. And in the third tube, I have it half saturated with water. So the key is to show what amount of water do you want to add to build the best sandcastle.
Okay, so we've got this tube. It's an open top and bottom cylinder, 3/4 full of sand, and you're going to lift it up. Well, the sand in there is dry. And I would speculate that in the same way as I turn my salt cellar over and salt comes out, I suspect the sand's just going to go everywhere.
Exactly. So if I pour it up,
yep,
the sand...
we now have a tray.
Pour it down the bottom. So dry sand doesn't work for a sandcastle.
Okay, I didn't need to have a PhD to know that one. I think that was relatively easy. So which one are we going to do next?
Now, wet sand should work. So I'm going to just top up this final cylinder so it has lots of water in. It has as much water as the sand can hold.
Okay.
And I just pull up the tube. And we see it slumps out at the bottom.
It did come out in sort of sausage shape, but then it quite quickly just, as you say, slumped, and it has flowed, almost like it was a liquid, over the bottom of the tray. And we now have a very poor representation of sandcastle from that one.
It's not very impressive, is it?
No.
It's not what you'd do if you wanted to...
So is this the Goldilocks, the just right one?
Yeah, so if you have a mix of about a quarter as much water as you have sand, and you fill a tube with it, I'm just going to... tamp this down, stop it coming up with the tube.
So the magic ratio is a quarter as much water as sand.
So it depends on what you're trying to achieve with your sandcastle,
okay.
But a good bet is about a quarter. So if I pull up...
And you're just drawing the tube upwards. It's holding. It's looking pretty good. So what we've basically got is a sandcastle. It's about the shape and size of a big beer can.
Yeah,
and it's holding.
Exactly.
It's standing there. Right, so granular materials scientist that you are, why does that work? And yet the one that had lots more water, clearly water is important because it's helping this one to stand up so beautifully. Why was too much water bad and no water terrible?
So the key to this is surface tension. So this is the same sort of force that keeps the droplets on your tap from falling down immediately. And sand is interesting because about half of it is just empty space. So when you add water to sand, that water can fill in that empty space. With a dry sand, you have no water, so you have no forces bringing these grains of sand together, and so it just flows out. When the sand is full of water, all of the water's there, so you have no surface tension because there's no air, there's no gaps, the water can just flow along with the sand and it flows out. But when you have a mix of about a quarter as much water as you have sand, then the water forms bridges between the grains. And the surface tension brings the sand grains together, sticking the sand together and making it cohesive.
And it's fabulous to now know how I can make such an amazing sandcastle, Matt. But the thing is, I don't want people to go away thinking that you do nothing but gratuitous sandcastle research, because actually this is really important. There is an important science side to this as well, isn't there?
This sort of cohesion and the strength constrained by water is very relevant to coastal erosion or landslips. We need to know how wet a soil needs to be before it collapses and flows, which can damage homes and people's livelihoods.
Now, obviously, you don't go building sandcastles in the laboratory very often, or do you? Is there not, say, a computer model that you could build for these sorts of interactions in order to work out how much sand to add to your cement and how runny it's going to be, or how likely the hillside is likely to collapse if we have a heavy rainfall, for example?
So, famously, there are an awful lot of grains of sand on a beach. And so it's very hard to build a computer model that includes all of them or even any significant number. In this tube, there's going to be about a million, at least, grains of sand. And you can't build a computer model that takes all of the physics into account of every one of them. So sometimes we have to do actual experiments just to work out the basic physics that are going on.
It's good old-fashioned legwork and spade work. Matthew, thank you very much. Well, that's the science of actually granular materials, Danny. But what about the biology of these sands and sediments? That's pretty important too, surely.
It's really important, actually. And it's been estimated that in just less than 1 gram of sand, there's over 2,000 different species of microbes, which isn't really surprising if you think about it. It's probably even more in mud. But these microbes actually excrete extracellular polymeric substances. And these help to cement, to sort of glue together the sand grains, which is really important for stabilising sediments. And this is why they've tried to stop people from driving four-wheel drives over sandy beaches, because it breaks this bond and means it can lead to more erosion as well.
And the sea doesn't do that itself when the tide comes in.
It does as well, but further up on the shore, where you only get the tide reaching at really high tides, it's quite important to have stabilised sediments.